At the end of the day, it's not about what you have or even what you've accomplished. It's about what you've done with those accomplishments. It's about who you've lifted up, who you've made better. It's about what you've given back. Denzel Washington. Welcome to Inspire Vision. Our sole purpose is to elevate the lives of others and to inspire you to do the same.
Hey folks, thanks for joining us today. This is Dr. Doug. Hey, you know what? With what's going on with the pandemic and in general, so often some of us experience a situation where we really truly experience grief. And that probably is one of the most difficult things that we have to deal with. And I'm really pleased today to have someone who has an incredible YouTube channel talking about grief, who's experienced in her own personal life an amazing deep grief in losing her husband, Camille Bauer. Camille, how are you today?
Hey, good, Dr. Doug. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's really a pleasure. Thank you. Well, and you know, it's interesting with what's going on right now. I think there's a lot of people that are experiencing deep, deep grief in their lives.
And it doesn't even have to be death. People have been noticing, because of the ritualistic things with COVID that we can't get together, people experience grief because of a life change and a loss. And a lot of people are confused at wondering why I'm depressed and why I'm exhibiting these behaviors, because I haven't lost someone, but something also can then trigger grief as well.
Well, and I think as you use the word grief, you're really talking about variants of degree. There's a deep grief. There's a different type of grief that we experience right now, being isolated and not being able to be with our friends and so forth. So I want to get into all of that. But you have an amazing story, and I'd love for you to share with the audience your story so they can kind of get a better sense of what you're doing and how you're working to help people.
You bet. I married the love of my life and had three small businesses, and time flew by, and I just, 2011, he wasn't feeling good. He had been an 11-year cancer survivor. We thought cancer was in the past. My late husband was 19 years old, and he had, when he did have cancer, and then we met, married, fell in love, and it became something in the rear view mirror. And in 2011, he wasn't feeling good. We ended up going back to his cancer doctors, and after tests, we found out that it was back with a vengeance. And he had 12 surgeries in those 4 years, from 2011 to 2015. And it was a really rare bone cancer called chondrosarcoma. So they don't really know what to do. It's contaminated cells that then generate and proliferate tumors. So all they know to do is cut it out. And so that's why he had so many surgeries and experimental chemos we were put on. So at this time, we had three children. My baby was just 8 months old when we found out that his cancer was back. And so it rocked our world. It led me through a lot of depression I battled with, and I had to shift my mindset, because at first it was like, okay, in 3 months when we retest, then I'll be happy when cancer's gone. And after this cycle of, anybody out there that has to deal with cancer knows the scanxiety, you know, as it leads up and then you get the news and it's not good, how do you live? How do you keep going? I found myself depressed and miserable and had to have a come unto Jesus moment where I was wasting the days that he was alive because I couldn't appreciate the life and the circumstances that we were in, even though they were highly imperfect. And so over the years, we just kept hoping for a miracle. And in 3 years in, we were told that the cancer had progressed to his lungs and he had like 6 months to a year left to live. And we looked at each other and we said, you know what, we're going to do whatever we need to do to appreciate and live in the moment. And happiness is fleeting if you base it upon a car, a house, a job, your income. There's always going to be something you're going to be chasing to find your happiness. But if you realize, and I had to learn the hard way of lots of years, that happiness is something that comes from within, that you decide. So over that last, so when he was deemed terminal, he actually lived another year and a half before he passed. And we looked at it as each day was a gift, and it really changed my perspective and my heart and helped me to see that happiness is a choice. Life can be imperfect. It can not be at all what you want, but there is always something to be grateful for. And in September of 2015, he passed away 2 days before his 35th birthday. So, wow.
Yeah, it's that is something. And you know, it's so interesting. I was listening to a podcast this morning, actually, and talking about how things happen in our lives. And as they do, we have a choice, particularly things that we would deem certainly not blessings at all, challenges mm-hmm. and traumas in our life, and how so often in times we can get angry. I think I've personally experienced that, where I've had some things happen and I find myself getting angry and really struggling with that a bit. And yet, as I was listening to the podcast, they were pointing out how we really have a choice of either being upset and allowing that to affect us, just as like you were sharing initially happened to you, or we can choose to accept what's going on and choose, as you say, happiness. And so you've developed a YouTube channel, haven't you?
Yeah, we've had a YouTube channel. It's Camille Bauer, just my name, about 4 or 7 years. And I also do a podcast as well called Put On Your Big Girl Pants. And I help people with grief. I have a group grief classes, and I also do individual grief mentoring and life coaching to help people through loss and disappointment.
So what do you find is, as you have different people come and seek help from you, and obviously the best person to seek help from is someone who's been through it and has found a way to overcome that and to find happiness once again in their lives. What do you find are the different ways in which people are responding to grief? And let's talk about each one of those, if you can define if there are certain different types of responses. And then also have you share, based on a specific response, how you help them. What are the things that they can do and how you can help them to start to find happiness and joy in their lives again? Because I'm sure that depending on the type of grief they're experiencing and their response to grief, it's going to be an entirely different pathway for them to reach the happiness. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, and I think a lot of people with grief think that it is a cookie cutter, a linear process. There are 5 stages of grief, and you just, oh, now I've entered stage 2 and 3. And that's the biggest lie, that grief is the same. It's not. It's not linear. It's messy. I often refer to it as a roller coaster ride that you never get off of. And similar to a fingerprint, grief is unique to every individual person. And obviously, grief has a lot of different reactions that people go through, and it doesn't mean one way is better than the other. And that's what I like to stress and to help people out, because they think they're doing it wrong. Am I grieving right? I don't feel like eating. I don't feel like going out. I don't know what to do with my loved one's closet. I can't even wrap my mind around all of these life changes when you do lose, when the grief is from loss of someone. So I just tell them, you need to be patient with yourself. Everybody's grief is different, and you're doing the best you can.
So what are some of the individual responses? For instance, you mentioned that you struggled with depression Okay, and that was one for you. I know people who have gotten very angry.
Absolutely.
Angry at others, angry with God, just angry in general. And that's their response. So have you found that there are maybe very specific responses that you have observed as you've worked with people that we could talk about on an individual basis?
Absolutely. So anger is one. Bargaining. So people go through the what ifs. What if I told my loved one not to go to work that day? Then they wouldn't have drove the car. Then they wouldn't have got in the accident. What if I would have gone into the doctor sooner? You replay all of these things, and that's a bargaining stage of grief, as well as the anger, and the thing is people might be exhibiting the anger and then the bargaining, or both at the same time, and that's okay.
Okay, and then you have depression.
Yeah, denial is one as well. So people don't know what they don't want to wrap their mind around. Holy cow, what happened? I can't believe that. Whether, especially now with COVID, a lot of people went into denial initially. What is going on? I can't believe this. There's no way my business could be going through this. There's so many different ways that denial works in grief.
Okay, so let's talk about anger first. When you are confronted with someone who, quite frankly, is very angry, they're just angry at the world and everyone around them, and you see that in their expression and their behavior, what are some of the steps that you help them with that you feel can really help them to reframe what has happened and really focus on something different than their anger?
Okay, that's a good question. Number one, with grief, you can't ignore it. That's the biggest thing, is if you suppress your grief, if you suppress your anger, you're upset, if you try to just bottle it up and bury it, it will surface in other aspects of your life. I've seen it with people's health declining, with their relationship quality and other aspects. If you are not giving that grief the opportunity to manifest itself, then you're going to be suffering for that later, because you have to go through the grief. And so with anger, I don't want people necessarily to shut it off and say, don't be mad, because that is okay to be mad. It's okay. It's natural for you to be upset and completely devastated that person is gone or that your life has changed. But if it affects, this is what I tell people, does it affect your day-to-day life? Are you always angry? Are you constantly angry? Then we need to assess and look at how can we problem solve and how can we make that a peak in a valley? Because with grief, that's what it is. You peak and you valley. It's this up and down emotional roller coaster. And if those emotions stop you from your quality of life, that's when we need to have some successful strategizing to help get through it.
Well, and I'm reminded of the saying, that which we resist persists. And so I think it's interesting that, you know, you mentioned that it's something that they've got to actually be able to accept, that they're just angry.
Yeah. And that's okay. You need to have a trusted friend. Go outside and yell and scream. Whatever you need to do to let that anger out, journal. That's a big one. You know, write how mad and crazy you feel like, because it is okay. You're justified. That's a side effect of grief. That's normal. That's healthy. And a lot of people think that it's bad. And I don't know if I'm grieving right. I'm mad all the time, or I'm depressed. But people ask, how can you not be depressed when you lost something or someone? That's a side effect, is depression. That's normal. That's natural. That's human.
Well, and you know, it's interesting, because I think you're making a good point. Oftentimes, you know, as we look at the emotions that we all have, and it certainly goes all the way from joy and all of that, all the way down to anger, sadness, grief, all of those types of things. And the key is, how does one remove themselves from that grief pattern or that anger pattern and move forward. And you had mentioned a few, but if you were working with me right now and I had just lost a loved one and I was just angry at the world, what would be some of the steps that you would recommend for me to take so that ultimately I could move out of that anger and start to again appreciate and be grateful for the things in my life?
I like to view it as growing through your grief. So growing through that anger, if you were a client of mine, like so many others that are angry and mad, we list what you're angry and mad about, what you've lost. And then it's powerful. Gratitude is powerful. List what you're grateful for, what you're thankful for. And when you shift that perspective, that empowers you in your life. And being able to have that list and frequently visit that list will help remind you of, no matter what, someone out there is praying for a life that you think is as bad as yours is right now. And if you remember that, it will help calm the anger down and help you to recenter and focus yourself and shift your priorities to, instead of feeding and fueling the anger, you're then acknowledging that it's there, but then choosing to look at good things that are in your life. Another one that I like to share to help people through that anger stage is reaching out to help others. What can you do? When you help someone else, it's the natural side effect is feeling better and feeling good and living outside yourself. Who needs your light? And I believe each of us go through trials and hard times in our lives so we can then be able to help strengthen others through theirs. So even if you're in the middle of this horrible, hard thing, reach out to someone else who you know is having a hard time. And right now, text, phone calls, FaceTime, Zooms, getting that connection. People are grieving the loss of touch and that human response to being able to connect with people. And when you know you are helping others, the natural side effect is you're going to have increased happiness.
Well, and that's interesting. I think you've hit on two keys, you know, gratitude. And it's really a matter of changing one's perspective. And, you know, as they look at things from their point of view and from their reality and their perspective, that can be changed. And as you say, that's a tough one. It's a tough one when you've just experienced something extremely harsh in your life to suddenly sit back and think, okay, how can I be grateful? And yet, as you say, that makes a huge difference. And then the other thing, which I think is wonderful, which is exactly what you're doing, which I love, is that you obviously took to heart the concept of serving others. And I imagine by doing that, that has helped tremendously for you.
Yeah. And Clint didn't just have this amazing life and then die and he's in the past. Those loved ones can help us learn how to live going forward. And that's the empowering thing of my mission in life is to help people live with happiness and joy, because those that we lost would want that. They deserve us to honor them, and we honor them every day by how we live. And people, you know, say, oh, Clint lost his cancer battle. And it's like, no, he won. Every day he chose to show up and live his life with joy and happiness. And we win cancer every day when him as my late spouse and me and my three kids, when we choose to thrive and be happy. And shifting that mindset and perspective is hard. I know right now, especially that we're in the home and with our kids and with our husbands, and sometimes we want to punch them in the face. But you can use this tip today of perspective, because I tell so many people, you know, what are the things that drive you crazy? When they come to me with relationship problems, what are the things that are driving you crazy about this person? And, you know, the toothpaste. He never puts the cap back on the toothpaste, and the toothpaste goes all over the sink, and his socks are on the floor, and his, you know, and after listening to them and letting them vent, I tell them, okay, if he were gone tomorrow, you would miss those socks. You would miss that cap being off the toothpaste. And I learned that while Clint had his cancer diagnosis, I mean, he watched car. He was a muscle man and a muscle car man. And he watched car shows all the time. And he was like, oh, my gosh, I want to choke myself because of how many car shows I've watched. But when he became sick and terminal, I don't ever look at those things that annoy me and bug me. Those disappeared. Because if we realize every day that we might not have a tomorrow, would you live your life differently?
Well, absolutely.
Would you love differently? Because everybody's terminal. You know, yes. Clint would say, I don't have an expiration date on the bottom of my foot. No, but reality is everybody's terminal. And you know, it's easy to get distracted by, oh, life and this is busy and this, you know, but if you just boil it down to every day, just try your best because it could be your last. That's empowering.
Yeah, it really is. Well, let's move on to bargaining. So again, explain what it is, you know, that bargaining is and how people are bargaining after grief. And then what are some of the steps, if they're the same grade, or maybe if there are some other steps that you take and suggest with someone who is experiencing the concept of bargaining?
So bargaining is when you're going through, when you're replaying in your mind all the different scenarios that might end up in your loved one still being alive. And I like to tell people, it's okay to do that. It is an amazing way that our body is able to give us a break from feeling the grief. When we're replaying, oh, if I wouldn't have asked him to stop at the grocery store to get this, then, you know, as we are have that on our mind in center stage, we aren't feeling the hurt and the pain of their actual loss. It's an actual break for your brain to be able to take a pause and replay that scenario and that play in your mind. So if you acknowledge that, give yourself the time. Go ahead and go through that, you know, those scenarios, because you're going to, and a lot of people get consumed by it. And that's the problem that we need to stop, is letting it consume. So give yourself, say, okay, if you're going there today, if the what ifs are going to be on your to-do list, you need to then go through and say, okay, I will give myself 30 minutes today to think about that what if.
So do you find that with the bargaining, does that include the regrets? Because I, you know, as you were talking, I was thinking how often we might be saying, oh, I wish I had told them I loved them more, or I wish I hadn't been so unkind in this situation, or I wish I had done this and I wish that I had done that. Is that part of bargaining, or is that an entirely different aspect of regret?
It can definitely be part of bargaining, because and it also can be part of anger.
Yeah,
you know,
true.
Like it's messy. It could make you upset and angry and mad that they're not there to be able to say the things that you wanted to say to them. It's unfair. And that goes as well in, that could be either one. So it just depends on what emotions that elicits. Is it depression, grief, and sadness, or is it anger along with that, or both?
So how do they ultimately break out of that bargaining pattern where it's all consuming? And again, as you say, everything is a health, you know, in some respects, it's a positive and healthy thing to go through some of those processes. But at some point in time, it becomes a problem if that's where you remain stuck. So how do you help people who are experiencing the bargaining aspect?
If they're experiencing the bargaining aspect because of their grief and loss, I have them journal and acknowledge their feelings. Because if you just suppress it, like we talked about earlier, it's going to manifest in ugliness in other ways. And acknowledging it, giving it the time. If you're going to cry, it's not bad. We're in a society where people think, oh no, they're upset, I need to fix them so they're happy. But that is not a good thing in grief, because you need to work through those feelings and those emotions to be able to grow through the grief instead of being stopped and stagnant and then having it affect and bubble through a lot of other aspects of your life. So let it out, crying. And I've told my kids, you know, each tear is a drop of love. I remember being in the viewing, standing next to my husband's casket, and someone coming up and asking me, how long are you going to be sad for? And I honestly, I couldn't even wrap my mind around the question, let alone why he thought it was appropriate to say at a funeral. But people say a lot of dumb things and they don't know because they've not been through it. But people ask, how long will you grieve? Oh, move forward and get over it because you're making me uncomfortable. That's really what it boils down to, is people want us to be happy because they don't know what to do. And if people would realize, how long are you going to grieve? Well, how long are they dead for?
Well, and you know, you mentioned something, and yeah, I mean, it is amazing some of the comments that you get that you wonder where on earth that person even came up with that. But you talked about journaling a bit, and it seems like as I've visited with other people on different subjects, it seems like journaling tends to come up quite a bit as being a very positive way in which to overcome some of these challenges, particularly as you're writing down each night a gratitude, something that you're grateful for that day. So how have you found journaling really helps people?
For me, I did a lot of vlogging. So my YouTube channel is a lot of me journaling through video. And like 3 days after Clint passed away, it was, or 2 days, it was his birthday. And I had to go to the funeral home and pick out his casket and everything on his birthday. And so I did a video that night of how hard that was. And, you know, 17 days out. And, you know, that's where people have reached out to me over the years and said, thank you for making me not feel alone. Thank you. Because grief is lonely, especially if you've lost a spouse. You go to bed at night and it's like you're alone and you don't have that person to bounce ideas off of and frustrations. It's just you. And instead of a single parent, you're a solo parent. And that spills over to grandkids and family traditions and so many other things as well. But if you can realize that it's okay, and sharing how you feel and sharing your grief story helps others. And that's, I've had, you know, so countless people reach out, and it's interesting because people who grieve are up in the night because you can't sleep. And so every day I go to check my email and it's like 2 a.m., 3 a.m., you know, people are watching my grief vlogs and going, wow, I'm not the only one. Thank you for making me not feel alone. So for me, my outlet was vlogging, video logging, and on my YouTube channel. But if you don't feel comfortable with that, each time you have the opportunity, you can be journaling or sharing that pain. When you tell the story of your grief, you give a little piece of that hurt away. And over time, that hurt will lessen and lessen the more you tell it. And a lot of people think, oh, people are sick of hearing me talk about it. It's old news and, you know, I should get over it. But it's like, to help you get over it is to talk about it.
Well, and you know, that's interesting. Something that came to my mind, I cannot journal. I hate journaling, writing. So many times I've had good friends and even, you know, personal coaches and say, Doug, you got to journal. And it's like, I can't. But you just bring up an interesting point that there's different ways. It's just like, you know, are we visual or are we auditory or are we kinesthetic? Yep. In the same way, the way we express ourselves can be different, even if we're just recording it.
Yeah, and you don't even need video. You can do audio. You know, grab your cell phone and do audio, an audio journal of just blowing off steam, whatever you want to say.
Yeah, and you don't necessarily have to share it, but sometimes, you know, what you've absolutely done has been amazing. So let's talk about the next one, depression. Now, you mentioned that you went into depression, and I know that, you know, we have really two situations. We've got someone who is chronically in depression, which has got to be an entirely different aspect that we won't talk about today, but for those that find themselves into a depressive state because of what has happened and because of the grief they're experiencing, how do you help those people?
So first I want to say, you know, consult a medical professional. That is the number one thing. If you feel that you need it, go ahead and talk to them and find out what can help you. But I have found, and it is a stage of grief, is depression. It's okay that you're sad. It would be really weird if you weren't sad that that person or that job you've lost or, you know, whatever you're grieving is gone. That's a natural human side effect, and it's okay. And we're in a society that has a problem. We're a fix-it society. Oh, we need to fix you. You got to not be depressed. But it's like, it's okay to be depressed when your loved one is gone. It's okay to be depressed during COVID when there's all of these things, that these rituals of life that you can't do. It's depressing and it's sad. And that's okay. When it affects, though, your day-to-day, when one day of depression stumbles into two, to a week, to a month, and you're not able to function, and it's affecting your relationships and your job, your way to bring in income, you know, that's when you need to assess what something has to change. And for me, because Clint was terminal and he was alive, I was grieving that loss while he was alive. And at first, I ate my feelings. That depression, I ate it. Like onion rings, bring me a peanut butter chocolate shake. Come on. Like I have fed my depression. And then it's a vicious cycle. Because then I have self-hate after I ate it. It's fleeting. It doesn't last. But I found myself starting to work out. And I did not run at all until Clint got sick. Like unless you're chasing me, I am not running. And when Clint got sick, my brother was like, "Hey, Camille, you want to sign up for this a half marathon with me?" And I was like, "Oh, hell, fine." You know? And so I signed up, and over those course of months, I slowly felt my depression start to lift as I turned my depression coping to a healthy behavior. It helped lift that. And that's what I do with my mentoring and coaching, is help find what is it that makes you happy? What is it that you enjoy and that you like to do? And those things help combat the depression and anxiety.
Well, and you know, that's really interesting, because I work with a number of people using a identity profile, a kind of a personality profile that is unique and similar to the DISC and different, some of these other types of personality tests. But this particular one really gets into the innate individual, as well as how they're going to, you know, behave in public, as well as what is it that really moves them. And I think it's fascinating, as you talk about that literally, if people could just really begin to understand what can motivate them and what can move them out of this depression. And for some, it could be running. For others, it could be writing. For others, who knows what it is. But the reality,
painting, creative outlets.
Yeah. Getting in and trying to develop a business even more. Whatever that happens to be, depending on how that works. I think that's fascinating how that can really help. And I think you really hit the head on it. So denial. People who are in denial. Explain a little bit about that.
So typically that's in the beginning. That's one of the beginning stages of grief. I mean, obviously it's not linear, but in the beginning you've got denial. If we were to give it a progression, you know, denial would be, "I can't believe this happened." You're shocked. You can't let the loss really sink in. And it's another way of your brain not letting all the pain and the hurt in, because you can't handle it right now. So the denial is a way of you taking a vacation from that actual reality. And that's in the, I could say, the very first stages, the very first couple, you know, days, weeks, month of the loss, where you're just like, how did this happen? There's no way. I can't even believe that it happened. And that's the denial. And then you go to anger. And that's easy. So that's easy to think that you are going to be angry. And so many people haven't visited the stages of grief. Why would we? It's depressing. Like, it's not like you're going to be sitting on your couch being like, huh, I'm bored. Let me look up the stages of grief and see what they are. You know, like, people don't understand unless you're going through it. And then when you're going through it, you're like, uh-oh, I'm doing it wrong. You know, but it's so different for everybody. So denial, completely normal. Anger, usually that's the next that you go to. Then depression, the next stage, which we've talked about. Bargaining, which we've discussed, the what ifs. And then the fifth is acceptance. Being able to accept that loss and realize they're not coming back, or, you know, whatever loss that you have experienced is actual and real, and you can't change it.
Well, and if you've accepted it, is that part of then just moving on from there without ever forgetting it, but realizing, okay, it's happened, and accepting it and having gone through all those stages, then how does one move forward from there? Or is that kind of a basic step of acceptance?
Yeah, absolutely. It is a continual process, but being able to talk about it and not have the extreme emotional pain, and you have honored that loss and you can talk about it without it eliciting anger and depression. And, you know, when you've kind of worked through the messiness of emotions and can think, okay, yeah, it did really happen. I have cried when I needed to cry, and you will still continue to cry, but accepting that loss for what it is and trying to, which is my favorite part. And I think there's actually another stage to grief, which is David Kessler, a grief expert, talks about as well, is finding meaning in the loss. And for me, it empowers, Clint is my purpose every day to strive to be the best I can. And let that person or what you've lost be your fuel to be better, be your fuel to push you forward. And when you accept that loss and then use it as fuel to be better, magic happens. You're able to grasp and find your peace and your happiness and move forward while still honoring your loss.
Well, and I think what's amazing is that as we develop to that mindset, what we put out, we observe and comes to us. And then all of a sudden, those good things come, which may have been there anyway. But the reality is, if we're not at that point in time, we don't recognize it as opportunities, as you mentioned. So you actually have two programs, and then you're writing a book, aren't you?
I am. It'll be, yep. Okay, put on your big girl pants.
Okay, so I'm laughing because that title almost just says, you know what, just buck it up and put on your pants and just do it. Whereas here you're talking about all these steps. So it's no other choice but to go through these stages.
Yeah, but you have to show up. You have to go through it. Even if, you know, put on your big girl pants, you're thinking, oh, that means I'm going to just push forward and ignore those feelings. It's actually it's hard to cry. It's hard to admit you're depressed. It's hard to succumb to the anger in the moment. But when you do that, you're honoring your loss, you're honoring that grief, and you're giving it movement. You're letting, you know, those feelings in your heart come up. You're letting you cry them out or talk about them, and then it moves and grows, and you're able, but versus if you suppress it, it can't get out, and you need to let it move through and get out. And that takes courage. A lot of people are in denial and they don't ever want to visit the loss or talk about it and close the door on it and shut that hurt away. But it's going to pop open and create problems in your life. So Putting on Your Big Girl Pants is a book that'll be out next year. And it's a memoir, a love story. And what's helped change my perspective in life is watching someone slowly be on the front lines to watching someone slowly pass away is a sacred and humbling experience. And I was 32 when Clint passed away, and it forever forged and changed who I am as a person. And wow. I have a lot of thank yous to say to cancer. You know, I'm a kinder, more empathetic person. My kids are incredible humans because of cancer. And when you can look at that and shift your perspective, it doesn't mean I'm glad that it came, but I'm glad there's not only bad that cancer brings. If you choose to allow it, it can soften your heart and make you better. And that's with any loss, not just cancer.
Well, and that is amazing, an amazing perspective. And you actually have two programs that I observed on your website that you are willing to help people through. Can you share what those are?
Yeah, so I have a free program on CamilleBauer.com, and it is 4 days, four ways to help turn your setbacks in life to set ups. And it's you can do it on your own time. You go and put your email in, and then there's fun steps that I walk you through every day. There's a downloadable workbook and 4 days to find more happiness in your life. My second program is a group grief mentoring class that I do in 6 week consecutive course. So I just had it last night. So it's week three last night of the 6 weeks. And we talk about very in-depth the stages of grief, making those decisions. Should you sell your house? Should you move? What can I do with the clothes? Is this right? How can I move forward? You know, it's a very in-depth, targeted specifically for grief and loss. My next round of that will be starting in January. And then I also do one-on-one mentoring in my gold level mentoring package. So if people need that face-to-face Zoom, I come up with a plan, and it empowers them to find their happy and help them shift their mindsets.
Oh, that's wonderful. And for those that are not viewing this and listening to it, once again, how do they get, what's your website so they can get more of that information and also spell your name for them?
Okay. Yeah. Cause it is abnormal. My name is spelled with a K. It's K-A-M-I-L-L-E, Camille, and then Bauer, B as in boy, A-U-E-R, like Eddie Bauer. Or if you were a 24 series fan, I say Jack Bauer, CamilleBauer.com. And you can have access to, again, my free program and any other things that I talk about and discuss and can help with in your life. If you're dealing with grief, loss, or disappointment in your personal life and in your relationships.
Well, Camille, thank you. I know, because I saw a few tears, that this can be very emotional for you, even as you go through the story. And I just really appreciate the fact that you were willing to share that with us. And I guarantee you, somebody's going to listen to this and going to be touched. And hopefully they reach out to you.
Oh, thank you so much. And it takes courage to move forward. And it's okay. It's messy. And you can do it. Those loved ones we've lost are cheering us on and want us to choose to be happy, but it's a choice. And sometimes those habits of happiness, we don't know, and we have to learn how to develop them. So yeah, thanks. Thanks, Dr. Doug, for having me on.
Oh, I really appreciate it. And folks, thanks for listening to us today. We hope you enjoy it. And for those of you that really are experiencing grief, it would be a great opportunity to go to Camille's website and to have an opportunity to get some help and communicate with her. So this is Dr. Doug. Appreciate you listening to us. We look forward to having you join us again soon. Have a wonderful and a safe week.